Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us on another wonderful Thursday evening. Days are getting longer, and today is Pi Day, 3.14. So we've been having some fun playing games around it being Pi Day, and it's also Albert Einstein's birthday. Happy birthday, Uncle Albert. So my guest tonight, you know, frequently I know people quite well when I interview them, but Leandra Graist and I had a short conversation about a topic we evidently both love, and I said, oh, let's do this on the show. So we are both going to be meeting Leandra together, and we're going to have some fun talking about how do you tell whether the stuff that's going on for you is a psychic or kundalini experience, or whether you're going crazy? Because that's the underlying question in a lot of stuff and what people are afraid of. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And today was a strange and sad day. If you look in the archive for the show, way back towards the beginning of the show, you will find an interview with Lynn Armour. And Lynn was, because the reason I'm talking about her is that she died suddenly today. And so this is a little tribute to Lynn. Lynn was a master healer. She was an herbalist. She was a psychic. She was a medicine keeper in two traditions, and not somebody who went to the reservation once a year. She was a pipe carrier and stayed on the reservation for years with her teachers. Part of her work for a long time with the man that she had been married to was demon hunting. They had a reputation all over the world for being the people of last resort. When you had something bizarre and terrible going on somewhere, you would call on Lynn and her husband, and they would fly out to wherever you were and do the amazing stuff that they did and clean up things that were horrific and nobody thought could be fixed. She was the real deal. And it was a great blessing in my life to call her my friend. And I know Lynn because she's my friend Frank Brown's teacher. And when I had my surgery almost 2 years ago now, my hip replacement, Frank said he was going to come up and take care of me, work from home from my house. He came up from Georgia. But when Lynn heard about it, she said, I'm supposed to be there. So she flew in from British Columbia and stayed with me for 2 weeks. The two of them did the kind of protection that I usually do for someone that's in surgery, making sure that energetically everything was protected and nothing was going to happen to me either in the hospital or here. And in the first 2 weeks after a major surgery, you basically take pain medication and sleep when the physical therapists aren't harassing you. And you know, they let me sleep, and when I was awake, Lynn filled me full of incredible organic food. She cooked food that was way better than anything I cooked for myself and took incredible care of me. Someone I never met before. I talked to her a few times. But obviously, we became good friends, and we became colleagues, and we passed clients back and forth, knowing that each of us had a certain set of skills and specialties, and when something seemed like it was better for the other person or we needed help, we were constantly doing that. And I spoke to her probably 4 or 5 days ago on Skype, and we were always communicating by email, and she would send out what's going on. She was on a retreat, on a walkabout in the desert in New Mexico. And she would tell us the stories of the wild horses and what was going on. And local friends didn't hear from her. They went out to look for her, couldn't find her, and started calling around and found out that she had been taken to the hospital and died suddenly. So Lynn's one of those people that's been protecting all of us and taking care of all of us, and nobody knew about it. So please join me in thanking her and sending prayers to her and to all the people that loved her. because we're going to miss her. Even though one of the things about having a shaman as your friend and they cross over is she's not really gone. And there's already communication with her, but still, it hurts. It hurts when we miss her. So tonight's show is in many ways for Lynn. And that's tonight's guest, Leandra Grace. Reverend Leandra Grace, you with us?
I certainly am, David. How are you this evening?
I am fantastic this evening. Thanks so much for being with me. We're going to have a lot of fun talking about one of my favorite subjects. Mm-hmm. Are you crazy or what?
I know, right?
And what I do with folks when they're on the show, just kind of the standard way we do it, is say, you know, who are you? What do you do? And how'd you get here? What was your path to what you're doing now?
Well, my path. Well, first of all, I want to say, David, thank you for having me, and the Guardians, and we'll talk about them in a minute. Say thank you for having us, and thank you for welcoming us. And you did welcome us shortly before the airwaves, which was necessary, and we'll talk about why that's necessary. Boundaries as well, as we get further on in the program. But let me tell you what kind of how my path started, and I can only go to the beginning that I remember, and that is at 8 years old, I met Jesus. Now, it's not quite the way the church puts it forward, but even as a small child, I had a spiritual experience in this introduction to a man called Jesus, making cookies with the church lady, and is very innocent and all of that. And, you know, and there was this, you know, inviting Jesus into your heart prayer and all of these things, and learning the Bible.
Well, we're back. We had a little technical difficulty here, but I think we got it solved. Leandra Grace, are you with us now?
I'm with you now. Can you hear me? Could you hear me before?
Well, it just everything went dead, and which is if you're doing electronic stuff and you've got powerful beings working. That happens.
From time to time, there is an interruption, and I apologize for all of that extra energies and stuff. But I guess we'll just move forward. So what I need to know is where did we begin, and where do we bring, you know, where do we leave off? Was any of it heard?
You were just starting to talk about meeting Jesus.
Well, I met him. Yeah, when I was 8, and it was wonderful. And then, you know, I kind of unlearned some of that innocent stuff as I learned some Southern Baptist doctrine, and I became a little bit of guilty stuff. And then some other things happened. And I'm going to give you the fast forward because they're all details, and it's not so much the occurrences that occurred, but what we've learned from them. And so I want to get to the topic as quickly as possible. So, you know, I did a stint in the military and all of that, and I decided I wanted to have a child. And when I decided that, that's when my desire to study more deeply into spiritual matters came about. It's kind of like it just all happened at once. And I picked up an author by the name of Ruth Montgomery, and it was an amazing read and really made it okay for this Southern Baptist gal to start looking a little deeper into the spiritual matters that I was already experiencing but was taught not to look further. Right. So I had to overcome my own upbringing. I had to overcome my stuff. Now, there was an occurrence, I must say, during some meditation back in 1988-89, where there was a whirlwind sensation above my head and like a knocking, popping sound, and it was kind of discomforting. And it only happened one time, and there was some out-of-body experiences in that, but they only happened a couple of times. And then I got busy raising a child and became a mom and had to put those things away and make sure that, you know, I did some raising right. And so then it was in 2005, an injury came to my back, and my world changed. And I had to really do some internal stuff to come to terms with being injured. And it taught me a lot of things. And an end result to fast forward is in 2010, I found myself surrounded by all my books. I found myself surrounded by incense, all my incense, some of my statuary, some of, you know, I was making jewelry, mystic jewelry. I was mystic sculptress then and doing this, you know, sterling silver sculptures with jewelry and all of these things. But I had this injury to my back and was not able to self-sustain. And I just threw up my hands and I said, what? you know, and I started journaling, and I was like, all of the stuff that I know, all of the things that I've studied, all of these what? Now what? You know, because they're not serving me. They're, you know, the books are no good to me right now. I cannot learn from them. I mean, there was something started changing. And there's a lot of things that we could include in details, but they're really kind of distractions and stories on their own. But the main thing is that I came to a point and I made a decision that, you know, I wanted to find out what I was supposed to do, and I wanted to get busy about the business of being busy. And I started journaling, and that's when Spirit consciously, I was able to obtain that conscious contact with channeling, and they came in like a soft glove, the guardians, this school of thought, and they said, why not for a while try something different? And from that point on, it was on. It was me and the guardians, and I didn't know that anything about Kundalini rising. I didn't know a whole lot of things that I know about now because I needed to study them. And it was probably 6 weeks after, 4 to 6 weeks after the channel opened, that I came intimately aware of Kundalini rising. And that's the only way I can say it. I didn't have a word for it until after the effect, because I had to really research what was going on, because, David, I thought I was going crazy. I thought I was losing my reverend mind, you know, and what was coming out of my mouth, the first thing is everything was coming out of my mouth. Everything was coming out of my mouth. If it came in my head, it went right out my mouth. And so I had a handheld digital recorder, and I've got probably close to 150 to 200 hours of audio recordings of information that came through that are still awaiting transcription. Because so much information was coming through, I had to put it somewhere so that in the event that I was nuts or I wasn't nuts, I could listen to it again to see if I was nuts. I mean, all of this stuff was going on, and then I found a word for it, and then I found some more information about it, and I started breathing, and then I started going with it, and it became quite the phenomenal thing. And so, you know, as the guardians were explaining to me, is I actually became my own Kundalini classroom. And they were my teachers. Mm-hmm. Spirit taught me what I know. And the first thing is, you know, when I asked them, how do I put this all together? These thoughts that are coming together, how do I get them all together? And I kept using these words all together. My speech became very repetitious, almost in catchphrases. And I began to realize textures of words, and I began to realize the color and the frequency and the harmony of a word, researching its origins and hearing a different frequency. And so, getting really into the middle of it, for those who are familiar with the writings of the book, The Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, I felt quite like Phaedrus, you know, trying to define equality and nearly, you know, ending up in a loony bin. But I didn't have to take it that far. So maybe it was his Kundalini. Maybe he was crazy. But I also want to talk about how it can mimic it. And one of the things that I do, David, is since, you know, I've come through it, and there's a lot of things we could go on and talk about, I want to kind of stay specific with the Kundalini symptoms and things people can do for themselves and to recognize it, is to understand that, you know, there's a lot of crazy nutty stuff that goes on when Kundalini rises. There's a lot of physiological reasons for it. But a lot of times, especially right now, it's happening at such a rapid rate, that our physicians and our medical community is not prepared to handle this. Now, this phenomenon of Kundalini rising, mimicking, and we'll talk about this probably after the break, but mirroring psychosis and psychotic breaks and psychotic thinking was documented all the way back into the 1800s in 1929. Again, it was restudied by Carl Jung for a brief bit, as far as I can tell, and some other psychiatrists along the way. And but it's not mainstream taught. And although it is not considered a psychosis, it is only, you know, they've already decided that in the DSMR, although it's not publicly talked about, it is listed in the DSMR as a spiritual condition and right. not a true psychosis. But well, it can present as one in a right. lot of ways.
When I have a conversation with a psychiatrist or anybody in the field, mm-hmm. The first thing I say is, I know that I have at least five diagnoses in the DSM-4. So let's start out with the fact that I know that those diagnoses are floating around in your head. And the problem for you is I'm not crazy.
Right. And then
because you're going to try and figure out how I'm mm-hmm. crazy because I have hallucinations, auditory and visual hallucinations, what you would call delusions, you know, all the stuff that they would put in there. I said, but I'm not crazy. So you got to figure out a way to work with that.
Right. How I do that, you know, when I have told actually a mental health care professional, you know, I said, well, I'm psychic. So there goes a whole thing when I tell them that. Mm-hmm. And that prefaces what for I'm going to say next, because it's all spiritual after that. And they have no say, legal, medical, professional or otherwise, when it comes to spiritual matters. Right. And so, you know, and I actually had one healthcare professional saying, well, keep up what you're doing because it's working. Right. Because evidently I was coping very well that day. And it you know, but. Friends with a lot of the folks, or I used to have a lot of friends in the mental health profession, and you know, they're just folks who went through a lot of schooling, and not everything necessarily that's available to be taught is being taught. And since we do know, perhaps we can start doing some of the reteaching, and that's what I like to do. Also, you know, is teach some of the mental health care professionals what it is that it looks like, and even demonstrate because I can actually demonstrate a trance state, what it looks like, and actually manifest that for them so that they can see it hardcore mm-hmm. what it looks like, and then watch the sanity return.
Right.
Yeah. So, and until they see it, it's a wonderment. And then once they see it, it's really easy to tell psychosis from the Kundalini energy. So,
well, I went through a similar period, probably not quite as dramatic. Although who can remember what's what after all the years? I started practicing yoga because of a back injury and found a wonderful teacher. And this was when yoga was pretty obscure. There wasn't a yoga center on every street corner. And she kept saying, you got to meditate. If you're not meditating, you're really not doing this whole thing. And you're really good at this. I want you to have the whole experience. So, all right, I'll meditate. And as soon as I started meditating, I started having visions and hearing things that were crazy in terms of not being from the physical world and not being explainable by anything I understood at that point.
It's outside normal experience. Right. What's considered normal right. experience, right? That doesn't mean it's an invalid experience, right. but it is outside of the bell curve of what they call normal or average experience. And we have to remember that bell curve too. That's a measure right. because the
So what happened for me, fortunately, I was able to sit with that and say, well, I'm not crazy. Mm-hmm. I know I'm not crazy. You know, I can, as having worked in psych hospitals, my definition finally got to, if you can take care of activities of daily living by yourself, mm-hmm. then you're not crazy. You can still do your life.
Well,
it's when you can no longer function in your life that you start wondering what's actually going on. But there were not a lot of people talking about this stuff. And a lot of the people talking about it didn't know what they were, you know, didn't have a lot of depth to what they were saying. But I finally found a couple of master teachers and started talking to people that actually understood all of this mm-hmm. and got the context for it and started getting some training so I could get some control, learned to do hands-on healing, did some other stuff. But yeah, there's that whole period where you're looking at what's happening for you and going, this is crazy stuff.
Same. If I tell anybody, they're going to lock me up for sure.
Right.
Yeah. And see, David, I went to metaphysical stores, too, to find out if I could find some folks who knew more about it than me. And this is one of the things that I wanted to bring up, too, is just because someone is psychic doesn't mean Kundalini is involved. And just because Kundalini is involved does not necessarily mean that person up being psychic. We're seeing it more and more often now, and I'm glad you brought up the teachings of the yoga. You know, it wasn't until those teachings were actually brought here that it was outside the realm of imagination on this continent of the experience of Kundalini, what it is. And of course, you know, for those who don't know, it's that potential energy, that spiritual energy that sits at the base of our energy centers at the chakra, the first just around the root chakra, which is usually the one that opens up first. And that can be a scary issue because those are survival needs. And a lot of fear can come in. And if the fear can take over, people can go to a bad place real quick. And I wanted to talk about that, the do's and the don'ts and the ins and the outs and things to be aware of while this is going through. Because it's when we resist it, it becomes uncomfortable. When we allow it, no one will... we're going to be okay. It tends to take care of itself, but something that, and it is itself, it's self-terminating and it's self-paced, and it ends and it comes and it goes, and it's kind of cyclic also, and it can be called upon. But one thing I did want to say though, something you said, David, was that ADLs, the activity of daily livings, is that if you can take care of yourself, then you're not crazy. And what I want to say is this, is that there are a lot of initiates who lose the ability or even the interest in self-care while they're in that threshold. And it is not a negative thing. It is just a fact that the head work and the body work and the energy work is so entrancing, if we could use that term, and all encompassing that who cares, you know. That folks forget to eat and folks forget to drink enough fluids and to eat the right foods. And that's a lot of where the coaching comes in, is reminders of stuff and helping to ground folks from some of their mental, thoughts, their thought changes, you know, and all of the rest. So did we need to go to a break here or were we going to go ahead? Continue.
Yeah, we're going to keep going because they'll splice it together. What I did want to do, though, is make sure that people know how to get in touch with you. Why don't you give your website?
Oh, absolutely. It's www.leandragrace.com, and that's Leandra with an H, grace.com. And my booking stuff is all there, and I don't have the coaching package posted because it's individualized, and I don't have it. There's so much that goes on, it's hard for me to individualize it. So I usually ask people to call me for a pre-screening appointment because if it's not Delaney, you know, it's probably not my business yet.
Right. So,
yeah.
And I also wanted to mention that if people want to send us comments or questions, you can do that through Twitter by tweeting to @FarkasFiles and use the hashtag FarkasFiles. And it will magically pop up on my computer screen and we'll be able to address your questions or talk about your comments. So, it's fascinating because your focus is really the Kundalini experience. Mm-hmm. And the things that I observed I'm going to tell you some of the stuff that I observed in psych hospitals and see what your response is, but, just for a moment, going back to not taking care of oneself when you're involved in doing spiritual practices and having these experiences, that's part of the reason that these traditions were usually carried out either in an ascetic tradition where you fasted anyway, where part of what you did was withdrew from the physical, from your physical needs, or it was done in an apprenticeship with a master teacher in a monastery, in an ashram, in some other place where they were very, very familiar with all the issues, and a lot of those needs were taken care of in a communal setting.
Absolutely.
And we're not doing that anymore. We're in this century, all of a sudden, lots and lots of people are having this experience, and we're doing it in the modern world as people living independently in our little apartments or houses. And it's a very different kind of challenge from what was going on hundreds and thousands of years ago with people that intentionally did these kinds of things.
Right. And they were studying for 25, 30 years, trying to bring on, you know, this Kundalini experience. And what I do want to say too is, you know, the first thing that, and this is if you channel and if you connect, the first thing you need to remember is this mantra is care for the body. There needs to be someone to care for the body. Now, not everybody's in a position to have someone assist them in caring for the body. And I did not, other than small things of people being able to bring me things if I didn't feel comfortable going outside my own room, for whatever reason, for energetics and that empathy. Right? But the thing is that above all else, we must care for the body, because without the body, the soul will not be experiencing the physical.
Right.
You know, and so that's why, and this takes a lot of energy. You know, when the Kundalini starts to rise, it becomes a neurological affect, and then we might as well go ahead. That's why it affects our brain and our thinking. Understand that we are total neurological beings, and our whole body is actually our brain, as we in spirit, you know, experience the physical through our body and the physical senses. So when Kundalini, this etheric stuff, this ineffable energy starts to rise up, the first thing it starts to do is it doesn't go for the path of least resistance. It goes through all of the paths to clear all of the resistance, whether it's and that's why a lot of times too, you know, folks will say, well, this hurts or that hurts, or I'm uncomfortable here. And it's that blocked energy that Kundalini is trying to push that blockage through. And it comes through neurologically, the sensation of pain. And it may be even so an old injury that you had anyway, you know, that painful rainful knee, they call it, right? So it could be something as simple as that. But let me get a drink here. I'm drinking a lot during the program. But the other thing too is that, you know, we have all this energy coming in. Our body is being neurologically charged. The gland that takes care of that, our energy levels, is going to be the adrenal glands. And if we look mirror out there in the public market, we've got energy drinks, caffeinated beverages out the humza and the wazoo, you know, and every manner of energy boosting ability that we can, because we know there should be more. We're burning up our very temples, and we need more energy and more energy. And so one of the first things that the Guardian said is that no energy drinks, please, because they're also neurological interrupters, and they're neurotransmitter interferers. And so when that happens with Kundalini uses the physical and actually, uses the neurotransmitters to help with the body chemistry. So as the adrenals get fired up and fired up, you know, our neurotransmitters, all of our chemistry is going to flux, which is why nutrition and hydration and electrolytes become very, very important to caring for the body during these transition periods.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, you know, that you could say the same thing about students or any number of other people that burn the candle at both ends and get into a state that's not very far away from the state that some people will get into with spiritual practices. You know, they'll get into lack of sleep, hyper-focus, all kinds of really odd stuff. One of the things about Kundalini rising, though, that most people have not talked about a whole lot, is that in going through those blocks, it makes your body shake.
It does. It does. And that's, you know, it's tantamount to, when there's blockages, it's like turning on the fire hose and having a kink in it. That thing's going to go and fly around and do all of that. But if there's no blockage, then if the water flows through, and it's the same thing with the energy. There may be twitches. There may be, some people develop restless leg syndrome for no apparent reason.
Mm-hmm.
And that's right down there at the S1, right there in that perineal area where the first chakra is. And there was a joke that I was saying between me and one of my friends that I was counseling with, is that, you know, Kundalini wanted to rise so badly in me, it broke my back to do it.
Right, right. Yeah. But the other thing that I've seen with medical people observing someone having that experience is that they'll think that it's a seizure.
Yeah, well, and clinically it appears that way, and the body is seizing, but it's not an epileptic seizure.
Right.
There's a malfunction. It's almost like there's a reconnection.
Right. So one of the, for me, when I'm sitting down and doing my work, because I do remote healing, typically I do it alone. And part of the reason is, depending on how intense the work is and how much energy flows through my body, there's all kinds of twitching going on and neck snaps and all kinds of other things happening, and people watching freak out. So it's like, you know, I'm used to it. It happens. It's just part of what I do. But for people that have never seen it before, it's creepy. And I've been doing this for decades. So, you know, it's not like it goes away when you have a surge of energy. You still get the body movements. The other thing I wanted to get your take on, based on my experience in psych hospitals, is, you know, there a lot of people wind up in psych hospitals because of what are considered auditory hallucinations. They have voices.
Right.
They're hearing stuff. And they'll have ongoing conversations with whoever it is. It's like they have a companion and they're just having an ongoing conversation. So in the middle of my apprenticeship, when I was apprenticing with two shamans, I was working nights in a psych hospital and I could see who they were talking to.
Very good. And they weren't necessarily a friend always, were they?
Well, most of them were talking to ghosts, and ghosts are just people, so they have the same personality they had. So if they were an obnoxious or dangerous person when they were alive, they still are, only more so because they're very confused about their circumstances typically. But most of them were benign conversations with a friend. You know, the ghosts didn't know that they were dead and what was going on, but they had this person that could see them and talk to them. And so it worked for both of them.
relationship.
Right. It's just another relationship until somebody shows up who wants to get the attention of this person that's capable of giving that attention and does it in a negative way. And I had to put one client who never was up in the middle of the night was up being harassed by somebody, and I had to go in and confront this ghost and get him out. Yeah. And fortunately, she was in a single room, and I went in and closed the door, and the ghost looked at me and I looked at the ghost, and he said, "Your staff, why can you see me?" You know, he was very clear that only the patients could see ghosts.
Right, right.
I'm like, well, you're in trouble now, boy. So there was that aspect to it. But the folks who were dangerously psychotic,
right,
the people who were being told by their voices to do bad things,
right,
and had that dark struggle going on, were being harassed by demons.
Right.
And in the way I look at demons, because it's such an emotionally loaded word in Christian theology and the whole story of what that means in Christianity, to me, they're just energy parasites.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's it. They're very simple. We have this great big dark, ooh, scary, powerful image. And the thing is they're just energy parasites. That's all they are.
Well, you know, there are some that are big and ooh and scary, but they're not the ones you'll find in your pantry.
Thank you.
But the ones that typically are harassing people are acting as a mirror for their internal dark story and what they think is terrible about them. They pick that up because that's what they're feeding on, and they just tell the story back to them.
Yes, over and over.
So you have this situation where the client is sitting with the clinician, with the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist is saying, "Who, you know, there is nobody there. Stop talking to this. There is no voice. There's nothing going on." The client is absolutely clear that there is someone else there and they're having a conversation. Mm-hmm. And that makes the psychiatrist crazy.
Right.
Because by definition, if the psychiatrist can't see this, he must be crazy from the client's point of view.
And so the client has no faith in the psychiatrist whatsoever.
Right. And the psychiatrist has no way of understanding it and no context for it, doesn't have psychic awareness to be able to take that in any way. Mm-hmm. And what they will do is give enough medication to make the experience go away.
Right, right.
But that also will take away all of the positive emotions and all the creativity from that person, and they're usually in an incredible amount of psychic pain from being shut down that deeply.
Right.
Get it away. And it always occurred to me that, you know, they need people like us, mm-hmm, to either be in the room to sort it out mm-hmm. or to get rid of the demons mm-hmm. in such a way that the client and the psychiatrist can have a reasonable conversation without the third party in the room.
And then the recovery from all of that can really begin.
Right.
That's when the doctor can be the most advantageous, when the medication isn't necessary, because the patient can self-heal through representing themselves in their own mind then, rather than
right.
continuously trying to shut down this voice. Yeah. Or yeah. trying to speak over it.
But the circumstances where that's possible is still very, very few and far between. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I've seen, and again, what's your experience with this? People who have demonic attachments, and the demons may just be feeding on their energy. They may not be possessing them and mm-hmm. having ongoing conversations. When I see that, typically the first and second chakra are chronically closed, mm-hmm. and almost everybody I've asked who has that combination of the closed first and second chakra and lots of attachments has mm-hmm. been abused as a child.
Yeah, that seems to be a pervasive pattern. In fact, you know, it seems as though, and it just may not be that it ever hit the headlines, but it seems as though that there were two generations where there was a lot of prevalence of child abuse and molestation going on. And it seems to be post-World War II. And there seems to be a lot of tragic events in that. Now, we can be angry as a society about it, but understand that those, you know, there's a certain amount of synchronicity with the fracturing occurring at the first and second chakra. And I will leave that there for other conversations so that it can be mended together at a later date. So some of these were actually, it's not that we should turn our eyes away and act like it didn't happen, but a lot of these were soul agreements to show to be the ones to show the ugly picture with the knowing that in later time they would be able to fix it and then show other people how to as well.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And that's always a difficult one to talk about because, You still have to do what you need to do for those people, even though
they still have to heal. Mm-hmm. There's healing,
even though the agreement there, and you know, it's not their fault. They're doing something that's actually a very honorable and amazing gift to the world. Mm-hmm. But you know, I wonder whether it was that generation that it was worse, or it's just that generation where it started to show up and surface and not be completely hidden.
I think it may be a little bit of both, but I also think that there was, how's the best way to say this? It was energetic contamination. And then once we put the picture out there, you know, we're not the Aboriginal tribes who don't have words for violent acts. You know, we have violent acts in our face. And when we start using the words, then it tends. Well, you know what, David, they said, let's back this up for a moment. They said, coming back to what you were talking about in terms of the dark forces, there was an unleashment of the dark forces that were ungrounded, and they were able to attach and have those influences and model this aberrant behavior for a generation of children. So okay. It's not like, you know, it's not like the kids say, well, I guess I'll do that, and they're at all at fault. But, I would never be said by that by me, but understand that part of the healing of it and the forgiving of all of our human experience is being able to really see what it's given us for, even mm-hmm. though it looks ugly and even though it is horrific and even though it's not fair, that type of upbringing, we must understand also that it did give us something. We can bring something away from that and then re-empower ourselves through our own decision. You see what I'm saying? And rather yeah. than staying in that victim. But truly, truly, until the healing has begun, there needs to be healing. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And part of that pattern, as I'm understanding it at the moment anyway, is mm-hmm. that when a child is being attacked and is totally helpless, not they feel totally helpless, they are totally helpless mm-hmm. in the situation, they will do what works to make that situation not as frightening and not as painful. Mm-hmm. And the easy way to do that is leave your body.
Yeah.
And the way you leave your body is you close your first and second chakras and you just pop out of your butt.
Dissociative states. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is almost
unfortunately, that habit pattern stays through the rest of their lives. And anytime they're confronted with something that makes them feel afraid and helpless, they will shut those chakras down and be out of their body. Mm-hmm. And all of that makes them more vulnerable to all kinds of abuse, but also to ghostly attachments, demonic attachments. All of that stuff is dependent on you not being in your body and your and the aura damage that happens from being abused.
I call it the battering of a soul.
Yeah.
You know, battering of a soul, because they're children, they trust, and it's you know, we can hurt each other in all sorts of ways here in the physical if we choose to. But a little bit more about the Kundalini. I just want to touch on this a little bit more about the awakening and draw some differences. You know, the telltale sign of the difference between whether you're going nuts and whether you really do have a grip on reality, although what's coming out your mouth and in your brain sounds crazy, is the fact that you know that it sounds crazy. You know that your thinking has changed. And it's different than it used to be or different than other people. And when we can say, I think differently, rather, you know, or if we expect everybody to think our way because everyone else is wrong, then that becomes an issue as well. So if we can say, yep, my thinking has changed, and understand that in and of itself, and checking for craziness. You know, I get people call me all the time and they say, Leanna Grace, I don't want to tell you anything because, and I said, okay, well, then I start saying this and this and this and this is happening. They're like, yeah. And I said, you're not crazy. And they breathe. And then they breathe, you know, because that's the one thing they want to know is, am I crazy? And if they are thinking they might be, chances are they know the difference between out there and just different.
Right. Because most people who are crazy will tell you very vehemently that they're not. They won't question it. One of the things that I wonder whether you're running across this as well is people who have gotten into some kind of spiritual community, whether it's an ashram or you know, some kind of environment where everybody is studying the same practices and the same teachings. And that will start changing the way you think. And, you know, obviously, because everybody, it's an environment where everybody is talking and thinking the same way.
Skewed view.
Say again?
It's a skewed view.
Right. And then they start having the true spiritual experiences that are possible through the spiritual practices. Mm-hmm. And frequently the people around them are not at a level of mastery where they can make any sense out of it and sort it out.
Yeah.
Sometimes even the supposedly master teacher guru may not understand what they're looking at, depending on what their level of experience is.
Absolutely.
And then you've got a really confused puppy.
Well, this is what I have to say about that is that if this is from my rule of self-knowledge, this is the way I go. This is my measuring stick. If someone is going to tell me that they can teach me and dawn me with enlightenment, I'm going to tell that person to run, do not walk away. Because the difference between being awake and Kundalini rising, there's a little bit of a difference there too. One precedes the other usually. But I want folks to understand that, and I lost my train of thought, David. I started thinking, you know how that goes. Anyway.
The train of thought derailed and there were no survivors.
No, there wasn't. It's not a one. But mainly what it is this, is that the thoughts will change. The overall outcome is understanding that the bottom line is we are all one. What we do individually affects the whole. Right. And it's not just a saying. When you meet that connection, when Kundalini rises, and I say it's like, you know, first of all, the top opens and then the bottom starts stirring. And then, you know, Holy Spirit reaches in and yanks that snake right on up every chakra, because that's just the way it felt with me. And,
right.
You know, there's all kinds of physical sensations that can go on. And one of the folks that I'm counseling with now, you know, once in a while I have to say, it's time to shut your mouth. You're losing containment. And I talk to my students this way and the people that I coach, because you got to, you know, it's got to be abrupt sometimes. And that's usually when they're speaking before they're thinking, and they sound as if they're tripping on acid, you know. So I try to get them to keep their mouth moderated. The other thing is, not everything that one will think during this Kundalini experience will be the truth.
Right.
It will not be the truth. It will feel like the truth until the next truth comes along. And so it's important.
The truth of the moment.
That's it. And so it's important not to obsess about any one particular truth. Just document it and keep track of it. So that it, you know, you don't have a Phaedrus kind of a story. You know, and the biggest thing is to realize when you become obsessed about a thought, find a way to get it out. And that's why we get this containment. We call it containment breach at level 5, is the fifth chakra, you know, has to be loosened up. And then by self-discipline, then we have to be able to wrap it all in, you know? And so I just, yeah. Go ahead.
You know, there's so much to talk about, and hopefully you will be willing to come back and can pick up where we left off, because we're getting down to the end of the hour. Because as you're talking, you're alluding to the methods that you use and the underlying approach, and I'm very curious about that and fascinated with it. Let's give, before we run out of time, let's give everybody your website again. Is Leandra, L-E-A-N-D-R-A-H, grace.com. And they can find you there and get information about your counseling and all the other programs that you do. Is there anything else that they should know?
Well, just, you know, the guardians always say that, you know, if you need a place to put the information, put it in your journal. And when you journal, journal truth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, and take care of the body during this experience. And you're not crazy. It's just the Kundalini.
Well, the Kundalini and the fact that the planet's, in effect, going through a Kundalini surge.
Absolutely.
With the planet. With the vibration rising as rapidly as it is.
And that's forcing it. Yeah, yeah.
So anything else that you want to leave people with before we wrap it up?
Well, what I always tell folks is if they think that they're on the road, you know, and you need someone to talk to, find a coach if you need somebody that's, you know, somebody that you can trust. And if you're going through periods of this Kundalini rising that you feel debilitated, call a friend. Or if nothing else, fix lots of food, have lots of water nearby so that you can care for the body. And as always, watch for signposts, connect the dots, find your path, live in love, and do good.
Great summary for pretty much everything in life.
Thanks for having me on the program, David. I appreciate it. It was a good time.
Thanks so much for being on the show. We'll talk again soon.
Alrighty.
So here we are at the end of another incredible show, even though we had some glitches at the beginning. And, you know, this is one of the things about doing this show that I love so much. I get to meet people who are doing amazing work, who have gone through the kinds of things that many of the listeners are just coming into at this point. And I learn something every single time. So people say, oh, you know so much. And it's like, well, I know a little bit about certain areas, but not about other areas. It's the reason this is called mysterious is that it is mysterious. There's a lot to know. There's a lot to learn, and you learn the pieces as you go along. And getting back to my friend Lynn, that was one of the things that she did for me, is she knew pieces to the puzzle that I didn't know, and I knew pieces she didn't know. And we could call each other up or send an email and say, what do you think about this? And fill in those blanks. So again, thank you, Lynn, for your time on the planet and all that you did, not just for me, but for everybody, and the incredible work that you did. So if you are curious about my work, please go to househealing.com. On the contact page, you'll find every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me, including my scheduling calendar, which will let you set up an appointment for a 20-minute free consultation, see what's going on with you or your house or whatever the issue is, and see how my work might be helpful to you. So please take advantage of that. Next week, my guest is Kristen Kirk, another fascinating and impressive healer. And please, once again, thank Uncle Albert Einstein, whose birthday is today, for all that he gave us, taught us so much, and happy Pi Day. This is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. And we'll be back next week. Thanks for being with us.